All right.
All right. Let's talk.
Talk bourbon societies.
Let's do a showdown.
All right.
It sounds so ominous.
This is episode 286 of Bourbon Pursuit, the podcast featuring news, reviews, and interviews with people making the bourbon whiskey industry happen. And I hope you had a great Christmas as we start leading in the new year. So before we start talking about today's podcast with bourbon societies, here's your weekly bourbon news roundup. Master distiller emeritus Willie Pratt of Michter's passed away on December 27th. He was born in 1942 to a schoolteacher mother and a coal miner father living in the town of Hazard in eastern Kentucky. Willie set out to seek employment in Louisville at the age of 20, where he joined Brown-Forman, which paid for his education as he attended evening classes, and he earned his degree from the University of Louisville. Willie worked for over four decades in a variety of positions at Brown-Forman, where he served for a period of years on the company's committee, studying distillation, cooperage, and aging conditions. At the age of 65, Willie retired from Brown-Forman, but his passion for bourbon, it led him back to work. And in 2007, Willie joined Michter's as its master distiller, where he oversaw Michter's production until he took a reduced schedule and was succeeded later by master distiller Pam Heilman. Our condolences to the Pratt and the Michter's family. The TTB is adding new standards for fill of distilled spirits. So in addition to the standard 750 mls and the 1.75 liters that we're accustomed to seeing, we will also now start seeing 700 mls, which is actually a standard in Europe. In addition to even more, there's going to be a 720 ml, a 900 milliliter, and a larger 1.8 liter bottling that is now being approved. After years of uncertainty, the U.S. Congress voted to finally pass in a law the long-awaited Craft Beverage Modernization and Tax Reform Act, making permanent the reduction in the federal excise tax rate that is paid by distillers. This measure was included as a last-minute amendment to the much larger $2.3 trillion spending bill that will fund the U.S. government through 2021, which notably also includes a major $900 billion COVID stimulus package. The Craft Beverage Modernization and Tax Reform Act originally became law in January 1st of 2018 as a two-year tax break for spirits producers, lowering the federal excise tax rate from $13.50 to only $2.70 per proof gallon, but only on the first 100,000 gallons. This measure was then granted a one-year extension at the end of 2019, but there is now a permanent and fixed solution going forward which helps all craft distillers across the U.S. Now moving on to bourbon release news. Well, actually, there's not really a whole lot of bourbon release news except really from us. We have Pursuit Series barrels now available on Sealbox. It looks like they did some inventory and found some extra bottles as well. There are less than 6 bottles left from each of these barrels. Episode 19, 28, and 29. We have also released our barrels within collaboration with Starlight Distillery. So episode 35 is a short barrel of straight bourbon with like less than, I think, 7 or 8 bottles left at this exact moment. And episode 36 is a bourbon finished in a Applejack brandy cask, which is super unique and very, very different. We're excited that we could partner with Starlight to bring these barrels to you. And last is episode 34, which is a sourced Tennessee bourbon that is not coming from Tullahoma. And it's about as dark as George T. Stagg. Seriously, you're going to be blown away by it. All of these barrels are available right now on sealbox.com and they can be shipped right to your door, so don't miss out. And besides barrel picks, societies are the next big trend. But here's the thing, they all do something different that makes them unique. And in this episode, we're joined by representatives from the Dallas Bourbon Club, the Bourbon Society of Greater Cincinnati, and COBE, which stands for Kentucky's Original Black Bourbon Enthusiast. We get a deeper understanding of how each society operates from a social, educational, and philanthropic perspective. So if you're looking to start a society or maybe just grow your own, here's a chance to listen to see how these fellas do it. Enjoy today's episode. Here's Fred Minnick with Above the Charm. Happy New Year, and we'll see you all in 2021.
I'm Fred Minnick, and this is Above the Char. The other day, a friend sent me a forum post about me. Now, this happens quite a bit. You know, people will be talking about something I wrote or something I've said, and they'll tag me in social media. That's great. I love that. Even when they're making fun of me, I get a chuckle out of that sometimes. This was in straightbourbon.com. And I always tell people how important straightbourbon.com is. It is one of the most important entities in the comeback of bourbon. Before there were internet chat rooms, and before there was Facebook and Instagram, and we had whiskey tubers, and we had podcasts, straightbourbon.com existed for people like us. It is the OG whiskey forum. It is where you went for asking questions about old bottles of Stitzel Weller. It's where you went when you heard Harlan Wheatley talk at a group, and you went in there and you quoted it and talked about it. And that's where like people like me, Michael Veach, Chuck Cowdery, Clay Risen, Reed Mittenbuehler, that's where we would go and huddle and, you know, talk to people. And it's really to me never gotten enough credit for what it has done for bourbon. And although I talked about it in my book, Bourbon, the Rise, Fall, and Rebirth of American Whiskey, I felt like you should know. And if you haven't joined, if you haven't been to straightbourbon.com, head on over there because you're about to be schooled by some OG bourbon lovers. And I'll tell you what, their stuff is straight facts. And that's this week's Above the Char. Hey, if you have an idea for a cool 2021 starter for Above the Char, hit me up on Twitter, Instagram, or Facebook. Just search for my name, Fred Minnick. Until next week, cheers.
From their bar to yours, Chad and Sarah of the popular YouTube channel It's Bourbon Night bring you their favorite at-home old-fashioned mix with the new Elemental Elixirs Golden Hour Syrup. It's a custom-made syrup with notes of bold black tea, warm spices, and orange zest. All you need is your favorite whiskey and ice. No bitters needed. One bottle makes 16 drinks, so that's only $1 cocktail before you add your own whiskey. They can also be enjoyed in other cocktails or spirits, mocktails, coffee, tea, and anything you can think of. It's crafted locally in Lexington, Kentucky, and you can get your bottle now at whiskeyambitions.com. Ed Bly and Rising Tide Spirits are back again with a new release of Old Stubborn Bourbon. And this release of Old Stubborn is a premium hand marriage of 10, 11, and 12-year cask strength, barely filtered pot still bourbon. It comes in at a staggering 123.8 proof. And the flavoring grain for this one, which the last one was wheated, but this time it's now rye. Rich, sweet, and bold with a long finish that's sure to be another eye-opener. You can order online at Sealbox or thebourbonconcierge.com, and you can even purchase in person at Revival Vintage Spirits and even now with very few select stores in Kentucky. You can get it now while you can, but be sure to do it because it's not going to last long.
And they're off for another Get 270 2020 Unicorn Raffle. Your $20 ticket gives you not one, but two chances to win from our lineup of 20 Woodford Reserve treasures, including the grand prize, the rarest unicorn yet, the Woodford Reserve Kentucky Derby 150 Baccarat Edition. Only 150 bottles were made and is just like the one the Derby winning owner receives. Quit horsing around and get your $20 tickets now at give270.org. Charitable gaming license ORG 0002703.
Welcome back to an episode of Bourbon Pursuit, the official podcast of bourbon. Kenny and Ryan here tonight, going live virtually, something like that. But this is going to be kind of a follow-up episode to one that we had done previously that was called Bourbon Society Showdown, where we had guests, members, people who led bourbon societies to kind of talk about their groups and kind of what makes them unique and what makes them different. And, you know, how do they try to go and attract new members and kind of how do they keep things alive? And, you know, Ryan, as we all know, you know, Bourbon Society is like, that's the cornerstone of bourbon right now. That's what's keeping it alive.
Yeah. And I guess Dallas Bourbon Club must have won the showdown. The other two's died and they made it through to this showdown too. No, that was a fun episode. And we thought it was so good. We thought we'd do it again because there's so many different societies across the country and they do it different ways. And it was really interesting episode and we thought it'd be good to do it again.
Yeah, it's very true. I mean, it's when we talk about these, we not only look at just how the group's different, but we look at it from a geography perspective as well. And we know that the types of people that are getting into these societies or people that are looking for them, it might be different in the Dallas area versus it is in the Louisville or the Cincinnati area. So it'll be kind of interesting to kind of see exactly, you know, how these things are progressing as well. So,
yep.
You ready to get on the show?
Let's do it.
Do it.
All right. So
Let's go ahead. We'll start with Pete. So Pete Schmidt from Dallas Bourbon Club. I'll let you go ahead, introduce yourself. Of course, I already said where you're from, but our fun random icebreaker tonight is what is
Pete's
the weirdest
from food? Houston from doing Dallas Bourbon Club. No, I'm kidding.
And then our random icebreaker tonight is what's the weirdest food you've ever eaten?
Okay, so thank you for having me back. I am sitting in Dallas, not Houston, that second-rate city, but the weirdest
that was my
food, the weirdest food that I've ever eaten was on a trip to China. I had a pickled duck's tongue, and I don't recommend it.
What did it taste like?
I couldn't get past the texture, so it was in my mouth for all of 2 seconds.
What kind of texture is it, like a jelly or is it like a paste?
It was jelly, and it was jelly of the jelly. It was awful.
Jelly of the jelly. Interesting.
Yeah. All right. And next we got Jamar Mack representing Kobe. So go ahead and kind of talk about Kobe as well as answer our fun random icebreaker.
Yeah. So as you said, I'm Jamar Mack in Louisville, Kentucky with Kobe. Which is Kentucky's original black bourbon enthusiast. And probably the weirdest thing I personally eaten, because I don't like much seafood, is probably oysters. Raw oysters.
I love raw oysters.
I've tried them in Baltimore, New Orleans. Like I've tried to go around and it's just not for me.
Yeah, my wife always says they taste like snot or boogers. And I'm like, you're crazy.
Yeah, not for me at all.
Oh man, I tell you what, if I ever see blue points on the menu, give me like 3 or 4 shucks of blue points, man. I'm all about it.
Yeah, they're solid.
All right, and then Todd Carnes representing Cincinnati.
Yeah, so Todd Carnes, have the Bourbon Society of Greater Cincinnati up here. We're probably unique because we straddle the river, so have some Ohio people and some Kentucky people, which is cool. And I actually have one gentleman that has driven from Indianapolis for the past 6 years. For our meetings. So shout out to a guy named Brad King, who's pretty awesome.
He must really not like Indianapolis Bourbon Club.
He tried a couple out there, and I don't think that they were up to his level of what he wanted. So, and the weirdest thing for me is probably when I was in Thailand back in my younger days for a sport, I did a bunch of street food. So there's a ton of seafood on sticks and like skates and octopus and all this other stuff. It was at one point we were just grabbing these sticks because we were with some Thai nationals and they just said, here, eat this. And for me, I just tried to say everything tasted like chicken back then.
Yeah, pretty much.
What about you, Ryan? What's the weirdest food you've ever eaten?
You know, I don't have any, you know, weird stick animal things. I mean, it's not weird to me, but people might think it's weird, like frog legs or I've had cow tongue, like soup or turtle, rabbit, pheasant. I don't know, but I haven't had like scorpion or anything crazy like or whatever Pete had. What'd you have, Pete?
A pickled duck's tongue.
Yeah, I've never had pickled that.
What's a turtle taste like?
Like chicken. It's in a soup, so it's like whatever the soup tastes like. I have had fried squirrel, which is, you know, not the best, but, you know.
Very gamey.
It's Bardstown at its finest, you know.
So I was going to say, where are you from?
Yeah. Freshly shot.
From the sticks.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And then for me, I was actually at a dinner. I think it was in San Francisco, and I was with one of my coworkers, and we ordered you know, like one of the fish and it comes like fried and it's got all the bones in it and stuff like that. And he was like, you got to eat the eyeball. I'm like, what are you talking about? I'm not eating the eyeball. And he goes, yeah, just do it. And he like grabs a toothpick and you just like kind of like circle around like the socket and just like lift it out. And he was like, I'll do one if you do one. I was like, okay. And he did it. And I was like, I guess I got to do it now. I did. It was like this crunchy jelly substance. I mean, it was definitely weird and nothing that I'm like, yeah, I need to do this again.
Yeah, but hard pass.
So Jamar and Todd, you know, you're both in, you know, like kind of like this Louisville, Cincinnati region. So you have a pretty good area of people to kind of pick and choose from. So Todd, I'll kind of start with you first because, you know, Cincinnati is actually, it's much bigger than Louisville in that regard. So kind of talk about what you're doing to sit there and try to reach new members and find new people.
Yeah, definitely. So maybe just a quick high-level background. It started as an online Facebook group, and a couple guys that had been going to the Louisville Society a long time ago in 2013 saw what I was doing, and we put our heads together and started having formal meetings with guest speakers. And at the time in Cincinnati, there was a bourbon bar called Old Kentucky Bourbon Bar, and it was bringing people together, but there was a missing gap. So that's kind of why I started the group. And it just ran with word of mouth. I've been fortunate to be in Bourbon Plus for an article and a couple other local type things, but everything for me has been word of mouth, just because I think that that's the most organic experience to bring people together. Is you're going to trust somebody that you know if they say, hey, this group's awesome, you want to be here, versus, you know, an advertisement. So we actually just moved away. We were meeting in New Riff. We were the only group, as far as I know, inside of a distillery at what point, and that really brought us a lot of new members. But now we're over in Fort Thomas, and what's cool is that city, that small city, it's a community where everybody knows everybody, and we're starting to bring in the locals, I guess you could say, which is really, really fun. But it's a Facebook group. I got over 7,000 people-ish on our group that's become a kind of the de facto chat for bourbon in the Cincinnati, Dayton areas. And it's really just exposing people to the fact that we have a group that actually meets in person. It's not just a Facebook platform just to show the Weller Reserve that you picked up at Jungle Gym that day. So,
so Jamar, I guess that another way to kind of look at this as well is, since you're in the Louisville area, we do have a pretty good concentration of bourbon drinkers here. I was reading a report from Drizzly that talked about how bourbon is still on a huge rise. And it said that like Louisville and Lexington is still one of the biggest markets for bourbon ordering through Drizzly and stuff like that. But, you know, I also want you to kind of talk about your group and really what makes you all different and how you are trying to attract new members, because you're a little bit different, right? I mean, it's a Black bourbon enthusiast society. So kind of talk about that aspect into it too.
So I would think the biggest thing is that we actually try to function more as a social club than what would be a traditional bourbon club. So we've always said that we would have come together under any circumstance, but we just happen to be coming around with bourbon. So right now, as far as like our membership itself, it's there really is no recruitment. It's actually by invitation only. And the reason why is that when we first started membership, we opened up to everyone. Anyone could join. And what we realized was is that we only had a very small group of members who were actually participating in events. And then you would have members who would only show up for maybe the Willett tip or, you know, the Michter's distillery visit. But then you had the other members who were constantly participating. So starting this year, we went to a format of participation. So we didn't know COVID was going to happen, but we require you to attend six meetings or six events. And then you have to give so many service hours per year to the group, which is when we go volunteer.
That's interesting. So like, kind of talk about that. I like the idea of, because I mean, you and Todd are like, it's very, very different, because, you know, having that online community, it's like, yeah, let's come in, like, let's just try to gather members, versus being very specific in either who you're inviting or, you know, how we can make sure that people are continually staying engaged.
I think for like us, once I started Kobe, and because for the first year, we only did events. So when we opened up membership, our first maybe 20 members, only maybe half of them were actually from Louisville. Our first like member actually drove from E-Town, purchased two memberships and drove back. So we realized that really our reach was much farther than just Louisville, Kentucky. We have members in Maryland, we have members in Texas. So we really tried to go after members who fit with our motto, which is come for the bourbon, stay for the community. So we, you know, so it's like, do you fit more with the group more than you do just wanting to pick up bourbon?
Yeah, it's a good motto. Pete, do you have a motto down there in Dallas?
F the Redskins. No, it's our club's motto is bourbon, networking, and charity. And that kind of outlines everything that we try to do. It's a group of people united by a love of American whiskey, a desire to network in and around Dallas-Fort Worth, and give back to the charity when we can.
So kind of talk about how you all are trying to reach new people. You know, is it through online communities? Is it through word of mouth? Like, what's the big driver to try to, you know, and are you always, and I guess that's a question for all of you, like, is there a ceiling? Is there a cap that you're going for? Or is it just like, hey, we need to keep this, like, as Jamar kind of said, people that are going to want to take this a little bit seriously and be involved and kind of create a more of a, I guess you can say, a tighter knit group.
Yeah. So I think the best thing that we ever did was register the website Dallas Bourbon Club. You get a lot, it's a city of transplants these days, and you have a lot of people coming in and they don't know anybody. So Google has been a huge driver to our website. From there, they fill out a form. And our rule, it's a lot like Jamar's, we want to meet you first because we really have a no asshole rule. We want to meet somebody.
Yes.
Who's Wait a gonna, minute. I'm in Dallas Bourbon.
We want to meet somebody who's not just going to like come in, grab one or two of our picks, and then we never see him again. We want somebody who's going to, you know, be part of that networking, help us pull off an event, help the logistics of a barrel pick and the charity things as well. So I think there's a lot of commonality between us and how Jamar's group's looking at membership.
I do love the mandatory service hours. I like that. It reminds me of, yeah, it reminds me of school because I grew up, you know, doing Catholic school, and they'd be like, you got to do these service hours, you don't pass. But I like that for Bourbon Club because it's all about charity. I mean, you know, that's what Bourbon Clubs are for. You know, you can get together and raise some money for some good causes.
It was either going to be service hours for that or service hours because you got sent to juvie. It was one or the other.
Right. One or the other, yeah.
But I will say, I think what the big thing with Louisville is that there were already so many clubs in Louisville. So it was like at the time when I was thinking of Kobe, it was like, what are we going to do to not stand out from a like a peacock, but like, why would you want to give me your money to join my club? So that was kind of how I looked at it from the beginning, was how can we structure this to be different, but in a good way? And then once, you know, most of you guys are like, once the distilleries kind of buy into what you're doing, then that really will kind of dictate how your club will go, because are you going to do barrel picks? Are you going to do more tastings? So that was kind of what Kobe's mission was from the beginning.
Kind of talk a little bit more about some of like the events that Kobe's had and put on, and whether it's, you know, you hustling to try to get sponsorships from distilleries, or if you're like, hey, we don't really need them. It's nice to have them because, you know, maybe they bring some free whiskey for us. But kind of talk about like how you are putting on some of these events.
I mean, our first year, the very first event we ever did was called Books and Bourbon. And we did it at Meta, which is like a local cocktail bar. So what we did was we collected books for a program called Books and Barbershops. And then at the event itself, if you came, you could learn about like an old fashioned, you could learn about a Manhattan. So we tried to have like adult books while collecting children's books. So we've always tried to have some kind of like common, what made sense to get together, but how could we also like include a charity? So we've done like digital detoxes over the summer where we would come and encourage you to lock up your phone. We would collect summer toys, but then we would have adults basically crocheting, doing like cheese tastings, like things that make sense for adults, but could be relatable to a child on that level.
Kenny would be out. There's no way you could lock his phone from him.
It's I've checked it 42 times since we've been sitting here. That, and I don't think I've ever picked up and done crocheting either. Kind of, how did crocheting get involved here?
Because when we went to Odeon's, there was a lady sitting there doing crochet, and I was like, hey, would you want to come back in 2 weeks and teach like a group of people? And she came back. I mean, like the thing
simple
was
story, yeah.
When we were first doing our events, I mean, we, you know, you don't really know what you have until you know what you have. So we were just trying different events. I mean, we would do an event and highlight a brand and not even invite the brand to the event. I mean, like we just didn't really know it at the time, but now we've gone more internal. And last year, I think we only did one or two public events, and most of them were membership only events.
Wow. So Jamar, you had to put on a lot of like really good points there. And so we'll go to Pete next, because you all talked about having kind of, you know, service and community as a big part of yours. So what are you doing to sit there and try to get people involved with charity or anything like that?
So we do about one charity barrel a year, where we'll get a barrel pick and mark it up. And you know, what we market up, we make sure to pay back our store, and then what we make in profit goes to a charity. And this year we were able to raise $30,000 for the North Texas Food Bank. And
it's a hell of a barrel pick.
Well, our, you know, one of these will do it.
Oh, E.H. Taylor pick, huh? Yeah. That'll have everybody chirping to buy a bottle, won't it?
Yeah, and we all get one because we're on the video, right?
Yeah. And so with that comes a little volunteer aspect of we are not only cutting a check to them, we are going to be on site and help with what they call the mobile pantry, which is handing out food. I think it's literally loading up a truck and handing out food to some of the neighborhoods in need. Rather than them waiting in line, you go to them. We've been able to do a Habitat for Humanity home. So we try to mix it up where we can with some charity where we don't just cut a check, but sometimes that's all you can do because we did donate to a hospital and they don't want us in there, probably.
They don't want you in there delivering babies.
Yeah, exactly. So we like to find a cause where we can put a little bit of manpower behind it, but sometimes cutting a check and letting the experts do their thing is the best thing.
Well, let me just say, we learned the hard way that it looks really cute to collect a bunch of books, but when you try to deliver 300 books, you then realize later on, like, oh, this is where everyone writes checks. Totally understand it.
It's not feasible.
Oh, it's like if you go out and get 5,000 worth of school supplies, like it's a great gesture, but it's a lot to handle and deal with. So I totally get the check part.
Yeah, one time we did a raffle at our Christmas party with all the money going to Toys for Tots, and we're like, oh, it's going to be so cool to be like, you know, with like Andre Johnson that year, he had all those receipts and a U-Haul full of toys. But then it was like, what are we going to do with a U-Haul full of toys? How am I supposed to get that around town? So,
oh man,
there's a lot of merit in cutting a check.
Yeah, I couldn't imagine doing the school supply thing, Jamar, and just be like, "Here's 4,000 pencils." I know you didn't ask for them, but here you go. So,
I mean, you show up at Staples and they're actually like asking you to leave immediately. Trust me.
They're like, "We can't help you with that."
You're like, "I got this much money. How many pencils does this get me?" And so, Todd, are you all doing anything, you know, charity-wise or trying to give back? Or is it more or less just like trying to find a group of people around, you know, just education and everything like that for bourbon?
Yeah, I think our group has become more of it's definitely morphed into a social group. So when we got officially put together back in 2014, private barrels were still a niche. You know, like every store wasn't doing it, and allocations weren't really seriously cut. Like, I think that might have been the year the McKenna barrel program was gone, or maybe 13. And that was just a really big focus. And probably starting around 2017 or so, we really started morphing into more of a social group of just being a place where people can go, and it's morphed into more of a family. So I might be a little different than these guys because I've had a physical meeting every single month with a guest speaker doing tastings, distillers, historians. Fred's been up to talk a couple times. So my actual membership is maybe 100 people, whereas some of these societies and groups run off that Facebook platform of, you know, if you're in there paying maybe a $50 dues, that's kind of your membership. So I don't really have, maybe I don't have necessarily the cash flow, shall we say, to really do big charity things, but we will every December for a repeal party, we'll do like a chili cook-off, and then we'll raffle off bottles to people. We'll raffle off the private barrels, the physical barrels we have. So we usually do maybe 3,000 to 5,000 a year, in writing a check. But my group's really interesting because if bourbon is the focus point and it's the second Monday of every month, and that's like their night out with this group. But when we do other social events, not as many people come. So it's really a different feel here in the Cincinnati area.
What are you seeing more success with?
I probably have a core group of 60 people that have been, you know, our members. We do $100 a year is what your dues are. And it goes towards the overhead. It's a complete not-for-profit venture. Just we make sure we have payment for everything.
stickers and stuff.
I've never done a sticker. I just ordered some stickers for a little local cost group I have on the side. It's the first time I feel like I'm just selling out because I'm actually doing a sticker myself. But
you had to get on at some point.
Yeah. They usually get stickers and it's always making fun of me. So this is the first time I've been in charge of it. And it's an interesting experience. But yeah, I mean, like I got probably 60 people that have been here for the past almost 6 years. And it's like, it's a family. So if the feeling that I have is if our group was as low as 30 people, that's fine. If we get up to 250 and 300, like the Louisville group, I mean, those guys are huge, but we're pure word of mouth. We're organic. And if I only ever get to 100, 125 people in person, and I'm happy with that because it's quality over quantity, if that makes sense, at least for me, for my approach on this.
Yeah, absolutely. And yeah. So it sounds like you definitely take a cornerstone is definitely like the education portion of it, you know, having Fred and having distillers and stuff like that around, you know, Pete, I know you all try to do stuff like that too. I believe Ryan has been to a Dallas Bourbon Club meeting.
I mean, we're getting ripped off, Dallas Bourbon Club. You know, dues are only $100 in Cincinnati. What are the dues of Dallas?
Oh, well, we jacked it up to 150. How dare us?
I know. Breaking me over here.
Yeah, so we do, you know, in this unprecedented time that we live in, we're doing a virtual happy hour every other Wednesday. We're trying to get somebody within the industry, whether it's on the distillery side. We've had Ryan on. It's, you know, just a little celebrity guest. We don't tell anybody who we got, just to create a little mystery and a little intrigue to get people to log on. So that's been a lot of fun. We let the guest speaker, you know, sometimes they'll walk us through a tasting lineup, or, you know, just give their spiel about their brand, give them about 30 minutes, and then thank you. It's been fun. And the members, then it turns into a normal member hangout.
It's funny, he says celebrity. I had to, when they invited me, I had to tag on to like the Greenbrier Nelson. It wasn't just about me, it was about them. So now I'm totally fine with that.
Andy was good. He was a lot of
fun. No, he was great. No, they were awesome. I was impressed by them. But no, those happy hours y'all are doing are great.
Oh, well, now that I'm in my office every Thursday, it's a little different element. I got a hard stop at 10:30, but those things go on into the wee hours.
Oh, I'm sure.
Oh, geez. And so how are you also, and let's kind of like take COVID out of the picture. Like before then, how are you trying to get, you know, other distillers or master distillers, or are you trying to find like the Balcones of the world or whatever it is that are kind of, and I'd say it's not in your neck of the woods. I'm like, oh, Texas, it's like this big, right?
Yeah.
And so how are you trying to get, you know, people in person for, you know, types of education seminars like that as well?
Shopify's already taken the cash register online, helping millions sell billions around the world. But did you know that Shopify can do the same thing at your retail store? Give your point of sale system a serious upgrade with Shopify. Shopify's point of sale is your command center for your retail store. From accepting payments to managing inventory, Shopify has everything you need to sell in person. And with Shopify, you get a powerhouse selling partner that effortlessly unites your in-person and online sales into one source of truth. Track every sale across your business in one place and know exactly what's in stock. Connect with customers in line and online. Shopify helps you drive store traffic with plug-and-play tools built for marketing campaigns, from TikTok to Instagram and beyond. And get hardware that fits your business. Take payments by smartphone, transform your tablet into a point-of-sale system, or use Shopify's point-of-sale Go mobile device for a battle-tested solution. Plus, Shopify's award-winning 24/7 help is there to support your success every step of the way. Do retail right with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/bourbon, all lowercase, and go to shopify.com/bourbon to take your retail business to the next level today. shopify.com/bourbon. If you're anything like me, then you can't get enough about bourbon. And that's why I'm a subscriber to Bourbon Plus magazine. Bourbon Plus is a quarterly publication that tells the stories from the heart of bourbon, the farmers who grow the grain, the distillers who labor over the process, and the people, like you and me, who raise their glasses to celebrate it all. Subscribe to Bourbon Plus magazine today at bourbonplus.com, that's P-L-U-S.com, and use code PURSUIT at checkout for $5 off your subscription.
So how are you trying to get, you know, people in person for, you know, types of education seminars like that as well?
Yeah. So in person, you know, we do a lot of outreach to these brands, and then it's kind of 50-50. These brands reach out to us as well. And, you know, those are fun, but it's really going to depend on the brand, right? Like, you'll pack the house for Michter's, but you might have a tough time filling a room for an up and comer. So, you know, we try to make it a balance of people we want it. You're crazy about brands that are exciting and up and comers. And, it's a chance to work with local bars and restaurants too. So, yeah, I think it's been good. They're not always the main events though, because they come and go, right? You can't always plan on them. So we have four signature events, we call them, and then those tastings in between, because people have busy lives, right? They can't come to every single thing you're able to plan. So we don't try to go too crazy on events.
And so with the people that are coming, I mean, do they just happen to be like passing through that week and travel, or are you like reaching out and saying, hey, can you fly your ass down here and speak to us?
We're more like, hey, hit us up when you're in Dallas. We've got, you know, a group of 150 people. Typically our events are, we can get about 40 to 50 in there on a weeknight. We'd love to meet you guys. That puts us on their radar. And so when they are in Dallas, the wheels can start turning and we can pull off an event.
So you've got like, if they say you're coming, you got like 2 weeks to like roll something out and get people together.
2 weeks is about the perfect time.
2 weeks is lucky.
Yeah.
40 to 50. I think we were in that 10 range for when Pursuit Series did their Dallas Bourbon Club talk.
That was, well, you guys wanted a more intimate setting.
No, it was great.
A more personal group.
Well, what I loved about you guys is like we went in, I can't remember, I think it was Bill's office, and you just had, he had everything. And he's like, whatever anybody wants, you know, you are very like sharing, very hospitable. Hypocon Lodge, it was a very cool event.
Oh, it was a lot of fun, and Bill knows how to put it on, that's for sure.
Yeah.
And so, Jamar, I kind of want to push it over to you now, because how are you working with other distilleries, and are you trying to do those same things where, you know, if you're trying to have a Michter's in one day to try to talk about their products to your group or anything like that, or is it just more of a social kind of aspect of it?
Yeah, so it's kind of the same thing that the Dallas Club was talking about, is that you kind of have these turnouts where you want to work with different brands and different distilleries, but it's kind of like, does anyone want the product? So we've had some situations where we've gone to distilleries, you go through this whole hour, and then you get to the tasting and you're kind of looking at each other like, why did we just spend an hour here? and so that was another thing that kind of why we changed kind of our format for how we run the club. So we have a couple more ambassadors that we have good relationships with, like, you know, Bernie Lumbers, George Harrison's of Evan Williams. So when they typically will have products, we will work with them and not so much reaching out to brands, if that makes sense.
So I mean, we're hoping to reach out to you.
I mean,
it'd be in a perfect world.
I mean, it just depends on what it is. You know, when Michter's is getting ready to release a toast, you know, I'm going to send that email to, you know, to Jamie and be like, hey, we need a tasting of this, but
we have an event coming up.
Yeah, but then there's like other products. It's like, do we really want a half an hour spill of that? And typically the membership doesn't. That's just the truth.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, I can understand it. And I think it's twofold because, you know, anybody that is inside of Kobe, and if they're going there for more of a social aspect and try to be with other like-minded individuals like yourself, yeah, you get some of that, more of that camaraderie, more of that like kind of fraternal feeling. And it's not to say that they can't also go and look at the Louisville Bourbon Society or whatever and go and try to do that once a month kind of thing to go and, you know, keep education, kind of have keep face with, you know, somebody that is inside the industry and stuff like that too.
Jamal, I got a question for you. How many women do you guys have in your group? Because I'm just curious on that, because I think that that's like a piece that I'm always focused on. And obviously, if you're a like a black bourbon group, like that's your focus, your niche, your demographic, I'm really curious about that, because it's changing up here in Cincinnati some, but I don't get a ton of exposure to other groups. So sorry, Kenny.
No, it's okay. All right.
Great question.
So we are much like you. We have less than 50 members. So we don't necessarily focus so much on the aspect of African Americans and people of color being in. What we try to say is that, you got to think, we started this in 2017. I mean, this is Trayvon Martin. This is Sandra Bland. I mean, there was a lot going on in the world that, not necessarily that we were not paying attention to it, but it was becoming a lot more, you were seeing a lot more of it. So the we wanted to put together more of a safe space. And anyone that shows, you have white male members, white females, all we want you to do is come and be part of what our mission is. So, it's much like, we don't want people joining because it's a niche. We don't want the member who wants to join the black club just because they want to be in the black club. You know, I mean, of course, you know, we're going to see race, but we are truly focused on, will you come to the club and help us build what our mission is?
There you go. Everybody can apply.
Absolutely. I mean, the more members, the better, but it's much in the sense of, you get so big, then it's like, what can you really offer 200 members? What can you offer 300 members? So
absolutely. Yeah. I mean, it kind of goes, like, even bourbon women themselves, like they've said that, oh yeah, we recruit men as well into their organization.
Yeah.
Now, Pete, you all have some women in the Dallas Bourbon Club, right?
Yeah, we do. I think it's about a half dozen. So it's a growing number, but still it's pretty male dominated.
And Todd, I guess that kind of goes back to you. I mean, what are you seeing in your part of the world over there? Because we all know that, you know, more females are getting into bourbon, and we want to try to make more inclusive environments for everybody.
Right.
So, yeah, kind of talk about that.
So I might be in a really cool, unique position. So my wife works in the industry. My wife works for MGP. She is known as the Remus girl. So she does that Remus portfolio. So that MGP branded that, you know, we all think of the contract giant. She's basically a part of a startup. So it's really cool to have that in our household. And she's the better half as it is. But Molly Wellman is another well-known name that's here in Cincinnati that has pioneered, whether it's cocktails, bourbon, getting more women into the spirit category. But I think we're sitting at maybe 95 of our annual members right now. I got to be at least 25 to 30 women. And they keep bringing friends because it's an experience. And I'll always go back to this, where it's that family feel, but nobody feels out of place in our group, which is really cool. You know, I think our youngest is 21, our oldest is in their 80s, and people that have been drinking whiskey longer than I've been alive. So a really cool demographic to be around. But we have a couple female groups here in Cincinnati. The Bourbon Women have a chapter. There's a 51%. Chapter. So it's really cool that, at least in this market, we definitely have that push of the ladies groups, and they're awesome, like awesome groups.
Yeah, that's really cool. Yeah, I mean, you kind of want to get away from an old boys club all the time, and you definitely want to, as I mentioned, kind of be more inclusive as much as possible. So I guess the next logical thing we go to and trying to figure out exactly, I mean, we do it ourselves as a part of the Patreon community. We always look at what brings people together. It's the whiskey. And what even brings people more together, it's barrel picks. So kind of talk about, we'll start with Pete.
People off.
Yeah, right. That's what we're going to start with, because I think that's the good hot topic. Because, you know, Pete, you were able to kind of snag yourself an E.H. Taylor single barrel. And those are few and far between. So I guess kind of talk about, A, who'd you have to, you know, really like grease their palm to make that happen. And then
grease
two,
their palm.
But then the other side of this is, you know, when you are going through a liquor store and whether you're taking their allocation, how do you position that store and say, hey, why don't you give us all your barrel picks? Like, kind of talk about that.
Yeah.
It's so, free business.
Right. Well, I guess we'll start with the second question. We started a relationship with a liquor store on the east side of Dallas called Lakewood Medallion. And he already had a pretty good allocation as it is. He's kind of in a weird neighborhood where he sells a lot of fine wine, but he also sells a lot of Fireball. So he gets an incredible allocation, and we worked with him on one barrel, and that worked. He sold through it really quick, and then another, and then eventually, you know, he bought in, and we've never had a problem working with him. So it's truly turned into an incredible partnership. So as long as we keep selling, he's happy to do it because we're able to turn him pretty quick. The Taylor kind of comes from an evolution of that, right? So our first ever barrel pick was a Maker's Mark Private Select. And we thought we had made it. We did it. We got a barrel.
You did the 8-hour barrel pick.
Yeah. Well, did the 8-hour barrel pick in the cave. And we turned around and sold and generated $5,000 for the Dallas Fallen Officer Foundation. And so that kind of gave us some credibility within the industry, right? We weren't just a bunch of good old boys knocking back good bourbon. We were actually doing something with it. And we used that momentum to get a Blanton's barrel and did $10,000 to a local hospital for that. And then our pals at Buffalo Trace were like, okay, you guys aren't total idiots and dummies. And We were so fortunate to get this one, and it's been phenomenal. What with what we've been able to do it with it, and certainly in the time, what's going on around the country.
Do you think a recipe for success there that people could try to copy is to say, yeah, we're just going to donate X amount on top of each bottle, and hopefully Buffalo Trace recognizes this and says, like,
well, definitely listening.
Yeah,
networking always helps, right? And just the things happen when you know people and you have a face-to-face relationship. So I'll start there, and then I'll say, yeah, everybody loves a good story. Everybody loves that charity aspect of it. So, you know, you got to find the balance, right? You can't charge your member $300 for a bottle and take that premium and sell it to charity, but you can do a lot with just, you know, a $50 margin over an entire barrel.
Oh yeah, for sure. And not only, I think it's a very noble thing, and it's a very easy thing to do, especially with something that has an attraction, you know, whether it's E.H. Taylor or even Four Roses or Willet Picks or anything like that. People are more than happy to pay over retail for that stuff and know that you can be able to take a lot of the money that is collected and, you know, put it towards a good cause. So I think it's an easy approach to make that happen.
And make sure you have a CPA in your club. That helps too.
Yeah, that's always the weirdest thing is like, how does this money funnel into my bank account and back out? And it doesn't look like I'm like laundering money here.
Oh man, it's like, guys, no liquor mention at all in the donation. All right.
No comments.
No comments.
Like in bold letters.
It's like, how many times we have to tell you all this?
And they, you know, there's always right, somebody well, like
sent that. Said for the bourbon.
But Kenny, dude, that's when you were here in Cincinnati for that event we did. God, I can't even think of the name of it now. The Edge.
Bourbon on the Banks. Yeah, oh yeah. Kentucky's Edge. That's right.
Yeah, we talked about that where, I mean, that's a frustration I have, and I have no problem being the asshole to say this. Like, it frustrates me that you almost now have a requirement of a charity bump just to get access. I think the charity piece is great. Don't get me wrong on that. But it's frustrating where I feel bad charging people $100 for a single barrel Four Roses versus the whatever cost is. And maybe that's because 5 years ago we had 5 outlets for private barrels. And now in this little region I'm in, there's like 25. So it's slim pickings here. It's so, so incredibly hard to get access. And if a barrel comes in, if you're not at the liquor store that day when they send their email out, you're not getting it. It's gone within an hour.
Yeah, I think you do bring a good perspective because especially with Jamar too. I mean, being concentrated in Louisville and Cincinnati, there is a large, you know, people that are consumers there's other spinoff groups, you know, other small little societies, and maybe they've got 25 to 50 members. You know, maybe they don't have a, you know, a charitable donation side. Maybe they don't have an education side, and it's just literally just a barrel picking group. And so they try to team up with a store and try to just, you know, suck everything that they can into it. And so there is competition. There's local competition that you gotta worry about.
I can't even get into stores anymore. That's kind of the crazy thing where, my partnership is now with bars that have a package license that we can legally purchase from. Right. And they're not going to go through 200 bottles or 160 bottles of a foolproof. So we can do a chop that way. That's the crazy thing here in the Cincinnati area. That's mine now. That's my avenue now into private barrels outside of just hoping that a relationship pays off and, I can get my way in there.
Yeah, you're right. I think a bar is going to be pretty hard pressed to sell or even run through 135 bottles of 125 proof whiskey and cocktails. That's going to be a tough one to swallow.
Old fashions.
It is.
Yeah.
And so, Jamar, kind of talk about what Kobe does. I mean, I know you've done Smooth Ambler before. Kind of talk about some other picks that you all have done.
So that's actually the only pick we've ever done. I mean, we looked at doing, I think, like a quarter barrel of the New Riff pick when that was a thing. I mean, but what I've tried to tell our group is that unless we're going to do a pick that is truly unique, and it's kind of much what Cincinnati Slum is, that you can never really get to the unique bottle unless you're going to do all the kind of grunt bottles first. So for our group, it's like, you know, what are we going to do with XYZ before we can even get to an A bottle? So we've only done one. We're on a list for the O. Forster Barrel Proof. But outside of that, I mean, we don't really look to do many barrel picks. Now, what we have done is something similar to what Cincinnati done is find a bar and try to buy like an allocation for our group. And then there's a couple local bourbon groups that we're now building relationships with where we're saying, when you go do a barrel pick, Kobe will buy X amount of bottles every single pick. And then when you do a Willy pick, you do a foolproof pick, then maybe we could get a larger allocation of that because we've been helping you with the Buffalo Trace pick, the Russell Reserve pick. So it's almost like teaming up with groups.
Yeah, help them run through inventory faster.
Yeah, that's it.
Dude, let's partner up.
Yeah, there you go. Exactly.
I told Kenny that earlier. Like, this is my favorite part of the industry. Like, drinking whiskey is fun, but meeting people is awesome. I've done a collab with the Paducah Society, a guy named Brian Shimwell. Awesome people. Like, that's where I think it's so much more fun, because you and I will meet in person, we'll see each other's personality, we'll see each other's palates and share stories, and then take that back to our members. And that's what I think is necessary right now with all this stuff going on. There's saturation, there's so many new people into the category and the market, and we see all these posts on our groups of the Weller Special Reserve, or they found a Maker's Pick, or they found this that some of us on here might look at like, okay, cool, awesome. But it's really bringing those people together, you know, and like, we get to know the individuals, and we can share stories. And that's what I think this industry needs the most right now, is getting back to old school storytelling, like the Jimmy and Eddie and Fred and Booker style stories of, check this out, this happened this one time. That's what I'm looking for.
Yeah, I mean, the Facebook has definitely helped proliferate bourbon for sure. But, you know, if you're just in these groups where it's like, look what I got. It's like, okay, another picture of some guy's patio with a bottle I didn't get. And it's so repetitive, right? So having these groups to actually be about relationships, events, putting faces to names, I think that's the key and the essence of a great group. I mean, my group's Facebook sucks. Like, it's just not very active.
It's terrible.
You're honest.
Yeah, the same.
Right, it's just like, I don't know, nobody, it's just not the most active thing. And if that's the worst part of our organization, then I sleep pretty well at night because of that.
So nobody's going on there and be like, I got the new Weller single barrel.
Yeah, we get that, but it's just like, it hasn't turned into a fireball group.
You just get Pete's reviews every week or something.
Oh, it's like, you know, hey, come to my part of Dallas. I don't want to go 45 minutes to you.
That's true.
But yeah, Dallas, I totally agree. That's what's most fun about our barrel picks is just that you know, the whiskey's great, but meeting everybody in person, you know, finding out their story, their background, like you're meeting so many different people from different regions of the country or, you know, different backgrounds. That's what I most enjoy about this hobby is the people. And yeah, Barrel Piss can do that for you as well.
And I believe, you know, as we will kind of start wrapping up here, because we start looking at even what bourbon societies are doing and what your all's groups are doing is you're trying to find like-minded individuals to kind of share and be a part of something bigger than just, you know, your home bar, right? You want to be able to take the opportunity, share it with, you know, new friends, other enthusiasts, because we all know that you've got friends that come over that aren't enthusiasts and they're like, oh, I want to try your Pappy. And you're like, damn it. Like, no, don't. Why? Just because you know the name, you know? So it's definitely one of those things where it's good to, you know, start kind of creating this sort of like fraternal atmosphere where people can really have an opportunity to kind of create new friendships and new bonds with other people as well. And especially in Dallas, you can find somebody hopefully in your neighborhood. So you're not have to drive 45 minutes everywhere to.
Yeah. Dallas is big.
You got to drive 45 minutes to work. I mean, luckily there's podcasts like Bourbon Pursuit to get you through it.
And that's why we like you, Pete.
But I think like podcasts like this and collaborations like this are what's going to keep this, the bourbon groups and the bourbon category going. But my selfish hope is that the distilleries see that we're kind of the foundation of keeping the momentum on this, because at some point rum's going to come into play. Armagnac might come into play. Gin might get a reemergence, right? And if all these people that are either bottle chasing or they're chasing the trends leave, and we have all this production, God, I hope this happens, that we start seeing age-stated bourbon back on the shelves for, you know, like when Fred blew the Henry McKenna because of that San Francisco medal, that was my biggest gripe against him. But like, I want to see the fact that distilleries recognize that we on this group right now, the people in the chat, we're the ones that are keeping the momentum going on this. And I want us to be able to have access to the private barrel picks, because we were doing it before it was popular. We're still doing it and buying their shelf labels. So just keep us on your mind when this category starts to dip a little bit.
Yeah. And I'll throw out my prediction that we are now sub 6 years, maybe 4 years away until we actually start seeing a lot of stuff that's on the market, because you've got great distilleries like New Riff and Finger Lakes and people like that that have a very good 4 year profile, and they're holding barrels back to actually release even older age stated stuff. And then you've got even other craft distillers that are starting to come up the market. And then you've got, I mean, hell, you've got everybody in the big boys industry here that are putting down more and more and more and more barrels every single day. So
here in like 2 to 3 years, you're just going to have a plethora of options of like really good stuff, I think. And it's going to be fantastic.
I've said the days of Weller being at pharmacies is like 5 years away.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
I used to get my Weller 12s at Rite Aid.
Yeah. Yeah.
That was my thing.
All right. So let's go ahead. We'll start closing out. So I want to give you all each one more opportunity to, again, kind of tell people, you know, how they can find out more about your club or society and everything like that, how they can join it and everything like that. So Jamar, I'll let you go first.
Yeah. So our website is 502kobbe.com. We only open up membership twice a year, September and February. Visit the website for information. And I really appreciate everyone's time and listening.
Absolutely. And then we'll let Pete go here.
All right. Well, thanks for having me again, gentlemen. We are the Dallas Bourbon Club, dallasbourbonclub.com. Fill out the questionnaire and we'll get right back to you.
What's the questionnaire? Yeah, what's on the questionnaire?
What's your name? What's your email address? And what's your favorite bourbon? Why do you want to join?
I would fail.
These are four nice loaded questions. If it helps, dang,
that's
selection.
Easy to get in there.
All right, Todd, I'll let you wrap it up for us.
Thanks, guys. So Bourbon Society of Greater Cincinnati. I do keep our group, tried to keep it local, but my email is todd@cincybourbon.com, and my website is not put together, so it's ironic I have an email for a website I still haven't built. But if you're in the greater Cincinnati area coming through, please contact me. And I want to make sure you check out our bars, our restaurants, and obviously our group if we can do it.
Fantastic. Well, gentlemen, I want to say thank you again for coming on tonight. It was just great to hear again how everybody's doing something a little bit differently. I think, you know, Jamar and Pete and Todd, you all bring great aspects of just what your clubs and what your groups are doing to kind of create, again, more of a bond within inside its members, and also share education, you know, and have fun with whiskey at the end of the day. That's what it's all about. So make sure you follow Bourbon Pursuit on all the socials as well. And if you like the show, you want to help support us, patreon.com/bourbonpursuit. And if you were a Patreon member, you could actually join and caught this episode going live as it went through, and also got to see some of the outtakes as people were dropping in and out. So,
AKA me.
Yeah. Yeah. Sorry. It's okay. We weren't going to call you out, but you called yourself
not
out.
A good co-host.
Yeah, it's all right. So with that, I want to say thank you, everybody, for tuning in, and we'll see you all next week.